Hey, podcast listener, this is Catherine. Before we start the show, I just wanted to remind you about our Boundless store. I was thinking about it because my brother texted me the other day and asked me to get him one of the Culture Segment books for Christmas. And he's probably listening, so he probably knows he's getting that now. But anyway, on our Boundless store, you can find other Culture Segment books that Lisa recommends you read. Also, our cool new Boundless t-shirts that are soft. They're also V-necks, so that's really cool. And when you buy directly from the Boundless website instead of from other places, you're joining our movement of young adults who are a huge part in keeping the Boundless show on air and keeping our community going. So go to boundless.org, go to the drop-down menu, and click on store. Boundless show.
Listen, if when he is hot to trot and wants you, and you cannot convince him to come along with you to evening church, why in the world do you think, once he sleeps with you, that he's going to all of a sudden wake up and say, oh, hey, let's go to evening church? If you can't get him now, you're not getting him then.
Well, that's Alistair Begg, and he is here to talk about searching for a godly spouse. Hey, everyone, it is Lisa Anderson, and welcome to The Boundless Show. I can officially say we are in the Christmas season because we're now in December, so let's get excited about that, and you can legitimately play all of your Christmas music many times over, so just do it. Well, later on, we have our inbox. We actually have a girl who's having trouble getting over a guy at her church, and it's pretty distracting for her, so one of our counselors is going to weigh in on that. All right, here we are for this week's roundtable, and this is actually a part two. We want you to go back and listen to last week, because this is a continuation of our conversation on first dates. And last week, we had left off with Jake talking about his official first date with his now wife, where he, you know, maybe made a little misstep in bringing her into a bad movie, but had to recover that. But
we surprised her dad let you take her out after that.
Yeah, so we've gained a lot of ground in figuring out what's good, what's not.
He was probably more surprised that we didn't stay through it.
This is like macho guy stuff. Like,
But the whole point of it was where we left off was that it doesn't have to be perfection to be a date that is successful. And in fact, to Catherine's point, it can actually break the ice and kind of make. So any other great stories along that front of just dates that, you know, could have gone wrong?
I always like having a mix of like, okay, opportunities for conversation, but also like actually doing something fun together, like a fun activity. I mean, you mentioned bowling or something like that. But my first date with the girl I'm dating now, we went to dinner and we were able to talk. But then we actually went to an escape room and where there were other people. And so it was an opportunity to actually work together. Which it's actually kind of unique because you also figure out like how you do under stress. Maybe that would be interesting for a first date if it doesn't go well. But like it was still something that was fun for both of us. And we did
it. If we escape, you get a second date.
That was kind of the caveat. You're fine. But it was, it was something that we could both do together that we enjoyed. And it was relatively low pressure because we were with other people. So it wasn't just the two of us. And like we had a good time. And I mean, I'm still dating her, so it worked out, I guess. But I don't know. I think doing something fun together, and mixed with communication, having good conversation is a good thing.
Yeah, and I think doing something that maybe is different, or like again, you don't have to do something you're both experts at, but it helps if like one person isn't an expert and the other person doesn't know what you're. Because like one of my dates was frisbee golf. And I'd never done frisbee golf.
Never frothed?
No. And the crazy thing about it was actually like in this forest. So I did kind of get lost. it was a little weird because I was out. Clearly, I wasn't quite getting the frisbees where they should be. So I'm out like chasing wherever mine went and stuff. And anyway, it ended up being really fun. And, you know, it was kind of good. It was a mix of a good activity plus conversation in between.
Well, so I think you were a good sport, too, because some girls would be like, I am not doing that. And I think that's kind of unattractive, to be honest. But you do want to be yourself. I mean, if you really do hate sports. But I think it's cool that you
did
it.
And that's why finding out like what you're going to do is very helpful for women, because the way, you know, she's going to be expected to dress, like I wouldn't want to have been thinking I was going to like the theater or something and then we're doing frisbee golf. So that's just good to know. Okay, what are good types of things to ask in conversation on a first date? What are great things to talk about? maybe a few things not to talk about. And let me just start right there. Because from personal experience, let's not talk about where your relationship is going during the actual date.
Where do you see us in 5 years?
Exactly. You all know I've shared this story before, that on my second date, a guy presented me with a PowerPoint presentation with a timeline of our relationship, including engagement.
Run away. Too much, too soon, too wrong.
So,
I just want to imagine God smiling in that moment, like, she's going to tell this story on the podcast someday.
Yeah, was it at least a good PowerPoint, though? Or was it like a crappy PowerPoint?
He was a business analyst, so it was an excellent PowerPoint.
Do you think he presented it to really his buddies boring. Before? Like, it how had, do you guys think this is going to go?
It had pivot tables. It had animations. It was very good.
So. Here's what happens if wedding venue B is full. Wedding date option C.
Exactly. So what else? What are some just great conversations you've had or things you've learned? Or
I've always tried to ask unique questions. So, I mean, I think there's this stereotypical, like, all right, tell me about your family. Tell me about just what do you do, that type of thing, especially if you don't know the person that well. So for my girlfriend now, we knew each other for a while before we started dating. And so I was like, okay, I need to come up with some different types of questions. Mm-hmm. And so, like, thinking about her personality a little bit, like, hey, how do you generally, I don't know if I asked this on the first date, but like, how do you process stress? So, like, I mean, I don't think that question exactly is one that's
good. That's why you take her to the escape room.
Yeah, that's why. But it's unique in the sense that, like, that's not a question, you know, those types of questions where you're kind of finding out who they are as a person instead of just finding things out about them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is who you are, not just things that you do.
Not just facts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and I was going to say, if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I really wish I was going on a date, in this time when you're not going on a date, do interesting things, because then you'll have something to talk about on the date. So read interesting books, start up a hobby that's kind of, even if it's weird, because I think that's cool. Like, if you're like, oh my gosh, you like reading Sherlock Holmes novels. I mean, some girls like that.
Well, do interesting things, because you may actually meet someone doing your interesting
things. There's a lot of benefits to doing
interesting
things.
There's that too.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, Jake.
You know what? You got
So, okay, you guys might have to correct me on this, but girls like asking how they feel about things. So they're like, you know, my parents live in another state. They like, well, how do you feel about your parents living in another state? Is that hard for you? And is it true that guys like being asked what they think about things? So, like, so what do you think about the... I don't know what a good example of that is.
I think it's 6 one way, half a dozen the other.
Okay. Kind of
depends on the guy and where you're at. Like, because there's certain things, I think that's more about personality, because I'm an internal processor. So if you're like, it doesn't matter if you're a guy or a girl, and if we're in a dating relationship or a business relationship, if you ask me what I think about something, I'm like, hold on. Give me about 48 hours to 72. Yeah. I'm going to do some processing, do some analyzing, drop some pivot tables.
Yeah.
And I'll let you know.
I'll take two horror movies and I'm the opposite.
Yeah. Like, I am very much, as I am asked questions, I need to process, like, right away.
Yeah.
And so if you can ask me, I'm the type of guy that you can ask me how I feel about something, and I will tell you. It may be talking a while, but I have no problem doing that. And so it's not necessarily, like, I'll try and formulate thoughts as I'm speaking, because that's just, I don't know, my personality.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, it's just, mm-hmm. I think it's probably, there might be some gender stereotypes to it, but I think there's a lot that's personality mm-hmm. based.
Yeah.
And I think for me, when it comes to, as I'm thinking through how a first date should go and what kind of questions should I ask, I always think, I feel, I don't know if this is an actual C.S. Lewis quote or if it's just one that we always attribute to him, but it's like the one that says, a friendship is born the moment you say, oh, really? I thought I was the only one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so what are those questions that I can ask to kind of, you know, create that commonality between us and get us laughing about something? In particular, for me, I like to laugh with people. I think I like to see what makes people laugh. So if I can find that point of commonality and share some laughter over something that we have in common, you know, what are some of those unique questions I could ask? Yeah. And if you need help learning how to ask unique questions, you know what? Rhett and Link from Good Mythical Morning, they ask questions in
okay,
really creative
but those
ways.
Are the kinds of things you want to vet on the front end, because some people can't handle that. Because the last thing you want to do is be on a first date and be like, you know, let's just talk about strongholds in our lives and what, because I don't want to feel like the only person.
Do you
who,
also
right,
struggle?
No, I'm talking about lighthearted stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sorry, not just anything that could be commonality, but like, what are some of the lighthearted things that we could have commonalities on, whether it's hobbies, whether it's comedians, whether it's music, whether it's TV, whether it's movies, like some of those lighthearted things about us, like try to find some of that common ground then build from there.
That's a great point, but you have to be careful not to ask a question just because you want to talk about something, because that's very obvious when people do that.
Sure.
Like when they're like, do you know, how do you feel about blah, blah, blah? Because, and then you launch into thing, like, that's not a real question. Like, you have to actually want
right.
to know
you're
what
trying
they
to
think
find
about
out,
that.
Yeah, I'm saying you're trying
yeah.
to dig out
no, yeah,
from
yeah. Is
them.
A good point.
So one
not
thing.
To not lead them.
Yeah, one thing that I started doing is I have a list on my phone of questions. And, like, that may sound like, oh, it's just talking points. But at the same time, I have a list of lighthearted questions, like, probably actually goofy questions. Yeah. And then... a serious question go along with it, something that I'm really interested in. Like, I want to know what you think about this. And so you kind of break the ice. Like, and every date, I ask one from each category. And so, and it's not, and some of it is like, okay, I want to be able to have conversation, but also, like, sometimes you need something to spark the conversation. And then all of a sudden it just continues to go on. And so you ask questions that you want to know about, but also have questions, I think, prepared just to, like, break the ice a little bit too. Right. And, I don't know. I think it can be a fun
questions?
Thing. Yeah. Yeah. It can be just a fun thing to that. I don't know. The two of you just do together every time. You're like, all right, what's the goofy question today? You know, I think it can be made into a fun thing that turns into like, oh, we actually really do have good conversation. So mm-hmm.
Would you rather yeah. step on a Lego or a bee?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it's such a parent
like
question, Jake. Such
a parent
question.
Uh-huh. I guess Legos. Yeah. No, Legos are for everyone. Come on.
Okay, just a few, like, quickly, just rapid-fire other first date ideas, things to do. Like, I would put out, like, a walk or a hike followed by lunch or coffee. Just something that, two little activities, both of them easily attainable, relatively cheap, and it's not like we are moving towards marriage.
Hmm. Well, I like the hike thing. Man.
Yeah, you could do zip lining or something. That can be a relatively short date.
I love
zip lining.
As long as you're not afraid of heights.
The only problem is if you do the course here in Colorado Springs, it's like $300 a person.
Ooh.
Ridiculous.
The pricing,
the
maybe pricey
Seven
out of
Falls
there.
One. Yeah, that
You're
could be a little too
date,
much.
Lisa. Frisbee golf, zip lining.
Well, that wasn't a date.
I'd
just
like
did
to
that.
Oh,
that was just
okay.
fun. Yeah.
And there's actually a lot of cool local things that if we check with our local government even, sometimes a tourist bureau, if you're in a bigger city, will have all these events. Like, they'll get all the food trucks together and you can do samples yeah. there, or they'll do... Actually, like in Denver, they have this burger battle every year and you can go for a certain price and
yeah,
try all the best burgers in the state.
One of our listeners on the Insiders page said he gets the like tourist magazine every month to look for like good date ideas, like unique stuff.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. they got things where you can go to museums, you can see free plays and all sorts yeah. of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan. I mean, were you the one that was talking about Scrabble? Like,
yeah.
I think
yeah,
games are just
date.
Fun, too.
True. And yeah. you can find out a lot about a person by how they play games, if they're a good winner.
yeah.
It's true. That was our first fight, was on that first date with my wife. Like,
that was a terrible date.
But it was, like, endearing. Like, we joke about it because we had an argument about whether or not a word was a proper noun.
Oh, my gosh.
Coit. C-O-I-T.
What does that mean?
It's a brand. Well, it is a brand. So it is a proper noun. And so, no, it's not. It doesn't count. You can't play C-O-I-T.
What is
it? In Scrabble, so yeah. just know that. Because we argued about it, but it was like endearing. It wasn't angry. So we did learn something about each other, that we could be competitive but still enjoy each other's presence.
Yeah. Okay. What about, okay, the first date has ended. How do you decide and how do you make the transition to, is this going to happen again? What's a good way to do it to say, let's do this again? And what's a way to say, you know, hey, maybe not interested, or how do you approach the possibility of a second date?
I have not done that well. I tried to...
Ever.
This is an embarrassing story. In college, I just was on this really bad date, and this guy was like, can I come see your dorm? And I was like, okay. So my friend texted me, meanwhile, and was like, hey, do you want a video chat? So instead of just politely telling the guy, hey, could you leave? I'm going to video chat my friend. I just started, like, Skyping her. It was so rude.
Okay, that is terrible.
I think the guy... Personally, I think the guy should say, this was really fun. I would like to take you out again. And then the girl either says, you know, I think you're great, but I'm not interested. Which, this is easier said than done, though. That's hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Should there be any, like, should you do any seeding of your interest in that? Like, if they get to kind of let the guy know that you'd be, without straight up asking, are there any clues you can plant? Like, in the
meantime?
I think
if you can give clues, it's super helpful and kind. I mean, I think that to let a guy, you know, you don't want to play hard to get or be weird or rude or anything. Like if you could just say, especially if he mentions something and you say something like, oh, I'd love to do that sometime, or that sounds really fun. Are you into that too?
Or, or something that worked for me, which is kind of lame, but I was on this date and we were talking about how he was good at directions and I had just moved here. And so I didn't know the area very well. Well, right after the date, I got lost on my way to the next thing. And I was like, So I called him and I was like, hey, I need help. My GPS isn't working, which was true. And he helped me find my way to the place. And then he asked me out again. So I think finding a connection, I don't know.
I think it's super helpful if a guy says during the date, like at the end of the date, well, hey, I thought that was really fun. I would love to do this again sometime. But of course, it's totally up to you. And just like put it in her court, you know, and don't act like, you know, you're going to live or die by whatever she says. And then ladies, that's where you say either, yeah, I'd love to, or, you know what? I so appreciate you asking me out, but I just don't see this going any further.
Yeah, like, that clarity thing.
Being honest about it. Yeah.
Say, like, just as when you asked to go on the date, being clear and saying this is a date and this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
At the end, just be upfront again, I think.
Right.
I don't think anybody's going to begrudge you. As long as you're not saying, hey, you want to get married, you know, but say, hey, I enjoyed, we had a great time, I'd love to do this again.
Right. Well, just like on the front end of a date, not needing to pray for 4 days about whether you can go to coffee with someone. On the back end, you don't need to, like, I don't like it when guys just like leave the girl hanging at the end of the date and then they may or may not call again. It's like, you pretty much know at the end of the date if you'd ever want to just do another date with them. Again, it's no big deal. And so just say it right then. Let either party know where they stand. Because again, you're not making a huge commitment here. This is just, do you want to do this again?
And the guy will be fine. I mean, I feel like girls like me who are more sympathetic and sensitive feel really bad saying no. But you're much nicer saying it up front than you are, you know, standing them up or whatever.
Yeah, it leaves a real bad taste if you're dragging it out. And then it's like, well, why would they do that to me?
Right. And just maybe even give it a chance. Because not that you have to put up with a horror a second time. But I remember Henry Cloud saying, like, his first date with his wife was horrible. And his second date was amazing. And they got married after, you know, in due time. But I think, you know, you're just going to set yourself up for being chill and being cool about it and maybe have more opportunities if you don't say one date, it wasn't amazing, so I can't go out with this person again. You know, roll with the punches.
Or if you're not sure, then go again, I would say.
Yeah. Well, obviously, there's a lot more we could say, but we'll go ahead and wrap it and let you guys, our listeners, weigh in with your own ideas, because that's where, you know, we got to crowdsource this kind of stuff. We need help people, you know, and again, we need to be able to have the freedom to just ask people out and go out on dates. Do you know, at our second pursuit in 2015, we actually gave that challenge from the stage to have it be like an open season evening where guys ask the girls in this room out and ladies say yes.
Did you get asked out, Lisa, how many times?
Okay, that, let's not even get into that. But it was super fun. And you know, we had people get married off of Pursuit, guys. So I'm just saying, be open to it.
Open season in the comment section.
Right.
Is that what you're saying?
just put it out there.
Hey, block a girl for.
Yeah. If your name is Anne, I would like to go out with you. Just randomly throw out a name and maybe she'll feel the Lord speaking to her. Who knows? No, that's awesome. Thanks, you guys, for winning.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Hey, everyone. We are here for this week's culture segment, and I get the privilege of introducing to you, who is, he's in the studio with me, senior pastor of Parkside Church in Cleveland, Ohio, Alistair Begg. Hey, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you. And maybe one of our, I don't know if you're our only Scottish guest we've had or a favorite or whatever. We try to keep those to a minimum.
Well, if I'm your only one, then I could be your favorite.
Then you could be our favorite. So that's good. I will say, though, because I know a lot of places talk about how, even though you've been in the States for, what, more than 30 years now?
Full time. 35.
Okay, you still have maintained the accent. But I feel like it must have softened a little bit because I've been in Glasgow, where you're from.
Sure.
You can't understand people there.
No.
That's not regular Scotland.
No. Well, it's regular Glasgow.
It's a little too regular.
It's regular Glasgow. I mean, part of the responsibility of parents in raising a boy in Glasgow is to constantly say, "Would you stop talking like that?"
Okay.
And so it has to do with the engagement of your parents trying to help you out of that. But I mean, you could ask me some questions and I could answer them in such a way that you wouldn't know what I was saying and neither would anyone else. But that's not the point of the exercise.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of, because a friend and my sister and I were there and we ate at a restaurant and our waiter, we couldn't understand a word he was saying. And mm-hmm. finally we're like, you know what? Just bring us whatever. We're not going to get this done. So anyway, but we appreciate you being here. You are known for, you have a book, Lasting Love, How to Avoid Marital Failure. And in addition to, I mean, it's not just that you've written a book about it. I am assuming that in your many years of pastoral ministry, you have talked to many a young single person, the person who's like, well, how do I know? And how can I be sure that God wants me married, or that I know how to pick the right person, or I know what that looks like? And I'm sure you've had to offer a lot of counsel in that. And you actually spoke a while back at Cedarville University, and we used that on the Focus on the Family broadcast. Mm-hmm. And it got me to thinking, okay, I want to touch on a few of these questions while we have him here in the studio. And so the first thing I want you to do, though, is tell a little bit of your own story, because you claim that your wife, whom you had to come to the U.S. to snag from the clutches of similar young men who were barefoot water skiing and who knows what all else, you know, probably had their eyes on her as well. You claim that you had never been interested in anyone else. You were determined you were going to marry her. Why the solitary focus?
Well, first of all, it's not entirely true, because I met her in London.
Oh, okay.
Because she lived in London as a girl from the age of 12 until she was 16.
Okay.
And in that time, I met her on a Sunday afternoon, invited to a family luncheon. This girl was sitting opposite me. And that began correspondence, because I lived 300 miles away from that. Mm. And I asked her to ask her mother if I could send letters to her. Hmm. So those letters began. And then, as you say, her father was transferred back to America. And now I had nothing to go on.
Okay.
So we made a kind of pact with each other after about maybe a year of writing letters across the ocean. And I said to her, you know, you have first place in my affections. I mean, we can't live I can't live as a priest and you can't live as a nun. You've got to go through your school days. You're only, you know, 17 years old. And there are all these fellows and, you know, high school proms and everything. I said, but let's just do this. If you are displaced in my affections by someone, then I will tell you, and I won't, you know, be unkind to you or string you along with these silly letters and so on. And please don't do that to me. And so that really was the way it worked. And we managed to make it all the way to, you know, the 16th of August, 1975, by which time, you know, we were both very old and very mature, you know. She made it to 20, I made it to 23. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even looking back on it now, and we still have all the letters, it is incredible to me that this happened. It is unbelievable to me. I don't think it would have happened today if we had been able to text one another and email with one another. Because while there are benefits in that, there's a downside to that I see. Mm-hmm. And the downside is that because communication is so instantaneous, it is so immediate, you're so involved and you so know, there's very little to talk about when you go out for a coffee, mm-hmm. because you've kept up with one another, or you've FaceTimed, or you're engaged. And there's something about sitting down with a pen and a bit of paper and giving thought to what you want to say in the awareness that it's going to take 5 days to get there and probably another week and a half before anything comes back. We learned a lot in that. And I even say now in a different context, I say to people, let me tell you something you'll never hear your grandchildren say. And they say, what's that? And I say, you'll never hear them say, let's go up in the attic and read grandma's emails. Mm-hmm. They won't. Mm-hmm. Because it won't be there. Mm-hmm. So unless you write, unless you do these kind of things, there's nothing there. Yeah. It's all in cyberspace.
Yeah.
It's all happened. You know, so that's off the point, but you got that for free.
No, that's great. So I want to talk about that a little bit, because now I think none of us would say, oh, my goodness, the early 70s, that's just like the Middle Ages. I mean, maybe for the young 20 somethings. But that said, there is something to be said. What would your assessment be of the way young adults are dating today? And aside, you know, the communication thing, I think the other challenge is, everyone is so accessible that it's very easy through texting to maintain this multiple times a day or throughout the day kind of relationship where you immediately start chucking the other things in your life, the other relationships, the other commitments, you just become about this person because they're so immediate to you. Clearly, it wasn't like that in the past. It seemed to be simpler. Like you said, there was a back and forth, there was a rhythm to it. What's your counsel to young adults who get caught up in that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think perhaps we would say that the things we've just mentioned exacerbate the problem. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember back in college, it was distinctly possible for the same thing to happen. You know, when it became known that Bill and Mary were sort of an item, mm-hmm. then that changed the dynamic. You know, he waited for her outside the restroom. You know, they always made sure they sat at the same table. So it became a sort of such a focus thing that it removed them, it isolated them from all of the other elements that were absolutely essential for them, although they didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that in many ways, the social media just does that. It becomes so compulsive. And we want immediate reaction, and we've got no place for any form of delayed gratification at all. And frankly, I think it is. I think it's stultifying, and I would want to encourage people to kind of backtrack a little bit on it.
Mm-hmm. Good point. So you actually lay out in your book, Lasting Love, you lay out things that we actually should be looking for in the opposite sex as we're pursuing a mate. And some things are similar for men and women. There are a few unique things, and I want to kind of talk through a few of those. The first, for future husbands or wives, which is great. We're glad you led with this one because clearly you love Jesus, is that this person has to have a personal faith and trust in the Lord Jesus and is committed to growing that relationship. Everyone in our audience, Uncle Allie,
yeah.
is going to say, oh, yeah, I want that. That's absolutely, I know that that's a priority. But I feel like so many young adults get tripped up in really understanding what that is and how to recognize it. What are the hallmarks of that? How do you know this person is serious about their faith and that it is for real?
Well, it would be hard to tell, again, from a distance, except I met somebody wherever I was down in Nashville a little while ago, and she had met a young man on social media on a dating site. And I said, well, how are you getting to know this man? And she said, well, he's telling me what books he's reading. He's telling me about his engagement in the local church. He's telling me what he does in whatever else it is. So she was building up an identical picture of the man who was clearly engaged, if you like, with the notion of Christian living beyond simply, I tick the Jesus box. Mm-hmm. So it's like somebody telling me that they really love golf. Hmm. Well, do you have clubs? No. Do you ever play? Well, I used to. No, that's not going to count. Mm-hmm. That's not going to count. So I think there are elementary things. If the person doesn't read their Bible, if they're not engaged in the local church, if they are not serving in some capacity, then they may just be immature and in need of help, but it may be that they've never really grasped any of those things. Mm-hmm. And so particularly if one person has got more of a handle on that than the other, then especially if the girl is more devoted than this man, she has got to be very careful that because she likes the fact that he's 6'2" and handsome and plays football well and has ticked the Jesus box, that she's prepared to settle for just ticking the Jesus box, that would be a bad move.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And I think that is so, it can be so problematic and it trips up so many women because they say, well, you know, maybe he's not there yet, but I know he will be, and I'm going to encourage him, and right. I'm going to get him into church, and I'm going to get him. And it really is, it becomes that they're taking on a project.
I always tell him the same thing. Listen, if when he is hot to trot and wants you, and you cannot convince him to come along with you to evening church, why in the world do you think once he sleeps with you that he's going to all of a sudden wake up and say, oh, hey, let's go to evening church? Mm-hmm. If you can't get him now, you're not getting him then.
Yeah. Another thing I like in what you talk about and specifically looking for in a husband, you have a number of character traits that I think play out the evidence of a growing and lasting faith. One of those being an individual of obvious integrity. And I like how you kind of unpack that as saying, you know, again, kind of the whole, the proof's in the pudding. If this person's a liar and a cheat about their taxes, about the way they're relating in their business at work, about why do you think that all of a sudden they're going to be full of integrity when it comes to your relationship, your family, your, but again, why so problematic? Why do we get tripped up on this?
Well, you know, because I think we're so prone to lead with our emotions, with in a kind of instinctive way. We allow, especially in romantic love, we allow the rationale gets subjugated at least. Mm-hmm. That's where I think we need our siblings or we need good friends, that we really love these good friends and we know that they love us and that we're prepared to allow them to speak into our lives and to say, hey, wait a minute. You know, for example, I remember years ago, one member of our extended family, and the very thing that you're outlining took place. And I remember listening as a fellow that was about to take her out on a date was explaining to her mother that he would tell people that they asked him, well, how soon will these parts arrive at my business that he was selling? He'd just tell them, when do you need them? And they would say, you know, but what, by next Tuesday? He said, yes. And then he was explaining to the girl that he wants to date's mother, well, there's no chance of them getting there on Tuesday, but I wanted the business. And you know what? Then I just phoned them up on Tuesday and told them it's been delayed. Mm-hmm. I wanted to stand up at that mm-hmm. moment and go, hey, get out of here. Mm-hmm. Wasn't my place to do. But they weren't together very long
right.
before those lies became a constituent part of their marriage, and they're not married today.
Yeah. Hmm. Another quality, should be able to lead boldly. Let's talk about leadership, because I want to maybe get away from this idea, the stereotype that it's some kind of machismo, it's some kind of a specific personality trait.
Yeah.
What does godly spiritual leadership look like in a man?
Well, you know, it starts with love, doesn't it? It's the love that gives itself up to play the part. I mean, I try and imagine what it was like in the Garden of Eden. And there is a sort of approach, I think, the kind of thing that you're alluding to, Lisa, which says, you know, so Adam said to Eve, now put the daffodils over there and the tulips over in that corner. Don't be so crit, you know. No, I don't think so. I think Adam is going, hey, Eve, what do we do with these flowers? I don't know. Let me help you. I mean, I'll carry them, whatever you want to do. So that idea of engagement, of partnership, of sharedness, it's like it's a waltz, it's a dance, and there are I can't waltz to save my life, so I shouldn't use this analogy. My wife tells me that all the time, but. But you cannot waltz if you're only thinking about yourself. And so in giving leadership in that way, it's not domineering, it's skillful, it's gracious, it's loving, it's kind, it should be selfless.
Mm-hmm. And I actually want to flip, we're going to go a little out of order here, because in light of that, I want you to talk about the female counterpart to that, that you actually describe men, you need to look for someone who's an initiative taker, but with an attitude of submission. And you said you've actually had women tell you when you're going to marry them that they want that part taken out of their vows. And you say, nope, then no, I won't marry you.
Right.
Give a vision for women of what that looks like, because if they're not supposed to, if the submission isn't, I've got this angry, domineering, you know, man who's going to tell me exactly what to do and who I am and negate my talents and contributions. What does healthy, godly submission look like?
Well, you know, we've just worked our way through this in Ephesians 5, and I'm trying hard as you ask me this to remember the things that we said as we worked through that particular piece. I think one of the first things to say that the caricatures of either the domineering notion of leadership or the sort of pathetic picture of a wife who just sits around waiting for the, you know, for the requirements to be provided, they are caricatures. They are not represented in the instruction of the Bible. So if it starts with that, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. So this leadership involves giving yourself up. So submission involves giving yourself up. So what did it mean for Martin Lloyd-Jones's wife? Martin Lloyd-Jones was the minister. He had been the assistant to the physician of the king. His wife was a medical doctor as well, Bethan. She never practiced medicine. She could have. Many do. But for her, she felt that the demands that were placed upon her husband and her love for her husband in that context was sufficient for her. Not something that he asked of her. Not something that he mandated. Something that she did. She gave up herself in order to make him arguably the finest preacher in the Western world in the first half of the 20th century. She was an initiative taker. She was intelligent. She was clever. She was the mother. She was his wife. She was everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know in immediate terms how to answer that except in specifics mm-hmm. of who the individual is. But my wife submits to me and I submit to my wife. Someone says, oh, wait a minute. I thought you were complementarian. That sounds egalitarian. No, I am complementarian. But of course I submit to my wife to lead her. I have to give myself up. I want to just want to go play golf. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give leadership here. You figure it out. Mm-hmm. You take care of it. Mm-hmm. You. No, that's not leadership. That's abdication. Mm-hmm. And so Sue looks to me for things. But Sue is better at nearly everything in life than me. And I am entirely dependent upon her. Mm-hmm. And if she wasn't kind enough and gracious enough to submit to me, I don't know where the world we'd be.
Yeah. So the other quality that's great, I think, for both parties, one that you mentioned, is the ability to laugh. And I do want you to tell, I think this is greatly illustrated by a story about your honeymoon, which involved a transatlantic trip on a ship that was pretty lame by...
by most, any standards.
I was going to say by most standards, pretty much by any standard.
By any standards.
Talk about how that played out.
Yeah. Yeah, laughter is, you know, humor really helps a lot, doesn't it? I will answer that, but there's an amazing story told by, I don't know if you've seen this story. Do you know the book by Walt Wangren? It's mm-hmm. called The Rag Man and Other Stories.
No.
You must find it. Okay. It's wonderful stories in it. But he tells stories, he has titles in it like, To a Woman With Whom I Have Been Intimate, But Whose Name I Do Not Know. Okay?
Okay.
But this is the story of him standing behind a lady in the checkout when her child, holds her to ransom and reduces her to tears. So he's very skillful. Mm-hmm. But he tells this story of how in the early days of his marriage, they lived in an apartment and they would get in arguments with one another. And the normal pattern was that he would go out. He would go out the apartment door, down the stairs, and walk around for a while and then come back. And so they have one of these arguments, and he grabs his coat, and he goes out the door, and he slams it, and he realizes that he has caught his coat in the door, so he cannot leave. Mm-hmm. It's pouring rain. So he either has to leave his coat in the door and go out and get soaked, or he's going to have to ring the bell and ask for his wife to make his coat accessible. And so he says, and so I rang the bell. And she opened the door and descended into laughter. And I, like a fool, grabbed my coat, thrust my arms into it, and walked out into the rain. Okay? So the moment there of humor was a moment of opportunity, a moment for reconciliation, and pride overruled it. If Sue, who had a fairly nice background, unlike me, had really thought about the fact that the 10 days of a transatlantic voyage were going to be, you know, we were traveling fourth class because there wasn't a fifth class. And if she had ever known that when we went down and down and mm-hmm. down and finally got into this cabin that was about the size of half of the studio with two bunk beds, if she didn't have a sense of humor, I'm not sure, but she wouldn't just have got off the boat and turned around and found another one to go back.
Okay, so you knowingly chose the bunk beds.
I had no option. We had no money.
Oh, okay.
No, we had no money.
Okay.
It wasn't, no. No, I'm not that bad. I'm
like,
Scottish,
like
but I'm
weird,
not stingy.
Like Titanic reenactment or
yeah,
something.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Oh dear. Okay.
No. No, if we could have moved up a couple of floors, we would have.
You would have. Yeah. Okay. But it was just, it was what it was. Hopefully you've, you know, maybe taken her on a little second honeymoon since
Then. We've moved along.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about beauty, because you kind of, you bring that up. And of course, it's kind of the elephant in the room that women,
sure.
you know, you say, okay, you know, well, you know, guys, you know, we know you love beauty, whatever. And then all the ladies get crazy because they're like, guys are so shallow and that's all they care about. And you talk about beauty that's deeper than the skin, but talk to both women about how to cultivate that and then men, how to recognize that. Because I think so many men are like, well, okay, the lowest common denominator is she has to be physically attractive. But then on top of that, I want her to love Jesus
right.
and whatever. But to really go after character first, practically speaking, what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, you know, isn't it true, though, that, I mean, it's a cliche, but beauty really is in the eye of the beholder. And there is something about, that is just mysterious. In fact, it's mentioned in Proverbs, isn't it, that where, you know, Solomon says, there's certain things I don't understand in life. And one of them is essentially the way of a man with a maiden or whatever it is, which sounds like a Neil Young song. But, well, it's there's no question that the engagement between two people has multiple dimensions to it. We're not just talking with a wall in between us. So you are communicating with me not only because I can hear your questions, but because I can see your eyes. I can tell whether I'm actually making sense or you're conning me because you're not making sense, but you want me to think that I'm making sense. And so in that dialogue that takes place on multiple levels, that's all happening. Now, there is an essential interior dimension to that that is intangible, but yet is recognizable, that is so powerful that it has, in many cases, transcended the things that have been on our top 10 list for whatever else it is. You'll never get whatever that perfect thing is that you put together. There's not a person on the face of the earth that can satisfy all of those longings, desires, designs. Therefore, it's going to be a compromise one way or another. What I was trying to say was, Don't compromise for the outside. Don't say, well, she's rather rebellious, she's rather nasty, but man, does she look good. Let me tell you something. Gravity will take care of that. Think ahead for a moment, you know, and examine what that will be like. And the same for a guy. You know, you don't want somebody who's always, you know, checking himself in the reflection in the window. That's a real bad deal. What Peter refers to as what the imperishable jewel of a gentle and a quiet spirit, so that beauty starts on the inside and then is outside. And I don't want to sound crazy about it, but you know, I look at me compared to the guys. Sue had to be prepared to do that, because if you look at me in relationship to those guys, you talked about the surfing boys. I mean, these guys had muscles in places I don't even have places. My hair hung down the back of my neck. They were all like, you know, Vietnam guys. I would have been like an anti-Vietnam war hero type. I weighed like 139 pounds soaking wet, the whole thing. What in the world what did I have going for me? Humor. Humor. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to Sue, if you had Sue in here and you said to her, hey, Sue, do you know what she'll say to you? He always makes me laugh.
He always makes me laugh.
And I write letters. Yeah. And I still write notes.
Okay.
I write notes all the time.
That's great. All right, folks, the book is Lasting Love, How to Avoid Marital Failure. There's more in there that we couldn't even get into in this conversation. We've been talking to Pastor Alistair Begg, our new and maybe favorite Scottish friend. So we just really, really appreciate you sharing your wisdom, Pastor Begg.
Thank you. And I'm glad that the editors will be able to make sense of this before anybody hears it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We are going to open up our inbox, and we have got one of our counselors, Tim Sanford, here to answer this week's question. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Lisa.
All right. Well, this is another relationship question from one of our female listeners who says, I was good friends with a guy at church and started falling really hard for him. I told him how I felt, and he politely turned me down, but it broke my heart. Now he's dating someone else. It literally pains me to see them together. Plus, he's a leader in our young adults group, and everyone loves him, but I can't bring myself to like him anymore because of how hurt I am. And I'm scared of dating again because I don't ever want to have this feeling again. How can I move forward?
Well, it's good that she's honest with herself about the guy and about her own worries and things. Because of the way she's describing the situation, how deeply it's impacted her, it sounds like there might be something more to this than simply the pain of a relationship that didn't get off the ground. Again, I don't know for sure, but the situation may have triggered some unconscious feelings of rejection or abandonment and maybe causing all kinds of other thoughts and emotions for her. I mean, thoughts like, maybe I'm not good enough, or, well, God will never give me what I want, really. Or maybe something like, I'm not lovable, or, geez, how stupid could I be for doing that? Mm-hmm. So, in addition to the present legitimate pain of a relationship not going anywhere, because that hurts, she may have something else going on that's unrelated to this, kind of like a dormant volcano that now became activated and is erupting inside of her. So in a situation like this, this is when it was maybe worth it to talk to a licensed Christian counselor just to check into things more deeply. I mean, there may not be anything, and that's good, But if there is something, we'd want to check it out and work on it before it gets any bigger and impacts any other relationships that might come down the road.
Yeah. It seems like he's a little bit of an innocent bystander in here, in that he's dating someone else. I'm sure it sounds like, you know, she's not saying he was unkind to her or anything. She's just kind of trying to break out of what were her own expectations in this. Is it better for her to just kind of like disassociate and move on, or should she work through the feelings with him, you know, still being in the young adults group or whatever?
With that one, it's an either or. If she can stay there and work through her own feelings and thoughts about it, that's fine. If she needs to pull away for a little while, no harm, no foul either with that one. If she's going to stay there and it keeps her from being able to deal with things, by no means, then get some distance, get a break. Because her own working things through is going to be what's the most important. So whichever works for her, really, there's not a right or a wrong here. So she's good to go either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good thoughts. All right. Well, Tim, thanks for weighing in on that. We appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
Okay, well, before we finish today, I just want to make a quick comment about a blog post we have up on the site this week about Lauren Daigle, titled "Lauren Daigle and All Christians Should Tell the Truth About Homosexuality." It's weird because I actually decided that I was going to write on this when I saw, or heard, I should say, her interview that she did. And then I saw that our writer, Monica Schleicher, had done a post on it. And so I worked with Monica to craft her piece. And I said, hey, we'd like to use this at Boundless, because I felt it was very reasoned and biblical and compassionate, and it kind of told all aspects of this in a very God-honoring way. And so I want to clarify that this article is not about bashing Lauren or calling out homosexuality as some kind of super sin. What we're trying to do here is just say what the Bible actually preaches and speaks as true. And, you know, I think our concern is you. Our concern is the Boundless audience, not the world. We're not out there to like stake some kind of claim. We are out there to help young adults like yourself in our audience discern what is true. And there may be folks listening right now who don't know what the Bible says about homosexuality. And there are several passages in Scripture where it is very clear what God says about sexuality in general and about same-sex relationships. So I had actually posted a little comment on our Facebook thread that we had going on just to clarify, you know, because someone said, well, you know, she told the guy to just go to the Bible. And I said, well, the problem is she said that after she herself had said she couldn't honestly answer that question or couldn't say one way or another. Those are both quotes, which kind of insinuated that either she really didn't know or she was ashamed to say. And I think that's problematic. You know, it's super confusing for a person who doesn't know the Bible and now has to, you know, muster the ability and the motivation to go find a Bible and dig up the answer themselves. And of course, she was the one who already said as a Christian that she herself didn't know. And so I feel like, you know, she could have said something simple like, hey, you know what? The Bible says it's sin. There are a couple passages I could point you to. And it is a very hard truth to take because I have a lot of gay and lesbian friends. You know, I don't always understand what the Bible says and what God lays down the line on. But the fact is, it's there. And a lot of times I myself have had to say this because I have gay and lesbian friends and they know where I stand and they know that this isn't an issue that I'm going to compromise on. And the fact is, whatever my heart is feeling and wherever the people are that I love surrounding this issue, God's truth stands, and it is my beacon, it is my standard, it is my true north, and that's where I have to land when it comes to interpreting Scripture and biblical truth. I totally agree with all of you who are saying that she was baited a little bit by this interviewer. Very true. Any of you who have been in the public eye or have had to give a defense for what you believe, know that you're going to come up against something like that. But we as Christians have got to know what we believe and be ready with an answer. That too is scriptural, y'all. Lauren is always very winsome and loving when I see her on camera or in interviews, and that is absolutely fabulous. But I just feel, y'all, that this was a miss for her. Doesn't mean it's like some weirdo, unpardonable sin or that she's just a disaster or a train wreck or can no longer speak on behalf of Jesus. No way. I hope she learns from it, and I hope that her heart continues to shine through. I think that will be super great. But honestly, her answer left me wondering, not just if she was trying to dodge the question or be vague, it left me wondering what she really believes. And I think that's concerning when she is very specifically out there singing about Jesus Christ and about the Christian faith. And that's a faith that I obviously stake my life on as well. So all that to say, there's been a lot of great discussion around this. We would love to continue hearing from you on this. So go to boundless.org. You can search Lauren or just scroll down our blog. You'll see the post. It's on social as well. And we're so glad you're part of the conversation. And above all things, we want to honor Jesus Christ in all that we do. Okay, well, that is it for this week's show. Do write to us at editor@boundless.org with any questions or concerns you have, or quite frankly, if you don't know who Jesus Christ is and you would like to know more about that, we would love to help you on your way. I will see you around next week. This is Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.